Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 2:02 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is November 8th. And stock markets today were relatively quiet. The Nasdaq, for example, was down 44 points. But relative to the advance that we saw yesterday, this was pretty admirable that it has held on to the majority of that advance. And the broader point, of course, is that when we go back and look at the history from this year, that 7,000 has been an area of resistance on multiple occasions, and then an area of support on multiple occasions. So it's rather important that that level hold if the broad consistency of the pattern is going to be sustained. When we think about where a midpoint danger line might have been posted, if the peak was at 7,200 and the low was at 6,200 and change, well, then we might anticipate that somewhere in between, about 6,700, would have been where we would have anticipated support being found. And it is interesting that just for one day, that a midpoint danger line stop would have been triggered. Now the question is, and I think it's a question that lots of investors are going to be asking, is having been stopped out, whether it is worth their time to be buying back in right now. Well, that's the big question that we have in the market right now. There's, I think, a lot of people that are probably sitting in some cash and thinking about where is it that we're likely to see markets trade over the course of the next few months. Well, the Federal Reserve today was pretty tight-lipped. They really didn't have much to say, but it does look like that they are going to continue on their hiking schedule with the next hike set for December. And what people are starting to wonder about is LIBOR. Well, when we look at the LIBOR rate, then it's been trending higher in much the same way that the two-year has been trending higher just about all year. It's at 2.6% right now, and it's broken up and out of that little range that it put in the middle half of this year. What I think is interesting is when we look at it over a very long time period, or as much history as we have, then there is a very clear sequence of lower rally highs, with the most recent one of those being in the region of about 6% back in 2007. Well, that is one of the reasons why a lot of investors are thinking about where is the termination point of this Fed hiking cycle. And I've heard a number of people talking about 4%. Well, that's somewhere that we can potentially see where the first area of resistance would be on this chart. But when we look at, for example, the 10-year Treasury yield, then we can see that it has quite clearly broken up and out of its range, despite the fact that the yield was in negative territory for part of the day. It did finish in positive territory. This is also I think what it increasingly looks like is a first step above the base. And the base has persisted for 7 years. I think two things stand out in terms of the difference in the trading that we see between approximately 2011 and now and everything we'd seen previously. There have been fewer very large downward dynamics in the last 7 years than we'd seen in the context of the overall trend downwards from approximately 1981. We can see, for example, that on each of the occasions where we had a range, they were resolved by incredibly emphatic downward moves. And this is on a monthly basis. So these are very big moves on the month. We can see that that has been the case all the way through in terms of this move. That when people, this was the clearest advance, or at least the clearest evidence that we had that people were buying the dips in terms of pricing. And that persisted all the way through until about 2011. Whereas since then, there have been a distinct absence of these very clear downward dynamics and a very clear preponderance of large upward dynamics. So now we're in a different scenario. You can quite clearly see that since 2011, this part of the chart looks a lot whiter than at any point in the previous decades of history. And that is supportive of the view that we are in a very different environment for the bond markets now. And of course, we can also see, if we look at it the other way around, that the total return on bonds has been deteriorating. It's been going down since approximately 2016. So that took some time to filter through, but now we're starting to see that we have a succession of lower rally highs here. And really, a break in that succession would be required to question that we're not seeing a top evolving here in the government bond markets. But of course, we will not really have clear proof that that is indeed the case until we see that the progression of lower rally highs, for example, on the LIBOR rate, on the Fed funds rate, has been broken. And in order for that to occur, we would have to see a higher reaction low during the next recession and then a higher high subsequently. So that also helps to highlight the fact that 40-year bull markets don't end with a whimper. They don't end overnight, that it takes years for topping formations like this to evolve, because we're talking about one of the biggest asset classes in the world that is going to affect the lives of just about everyone. So now let's think about where are we in terms of the stock market cycle. Well, the stock market cycle is obviously going to be heavily influenced by the cycle in terms of monetary policy. And what is particularly interesting is that the yield curve spread has been stagnant over the course of the last couple of months. It's still around the 27 basis point level. It is not negative. That suggests that one of the most reliable lead indicators for future recessions is not flashing red. Then when we look at oil prices, well, Brent crude was down over a dollar in here today. It reversed an earlier advance and is coming back down to post a new reaction low and testing this $70 area. Well, $70 was an area of support in August, and it was resistance back in January and in March. So now the question is that we do have a, I think anyone with eyes can see that there is a short-term oversold condition. When we look at a stochastic indicator, for example, it is very oversold on both a long and short stochastic. So we know that it is due a bounce. But the big question right now is, how much of a bounce is it likely to get? This is no longer a consistent trend. And West Texas Intermediate is leading on the downside. Well, if we go back and think about the lead indicators for future recessions, well, it's surging oil prices are one of the things that really help to tip the global economy into a recession, because it's a tax on consumption. Well, it's less of a tax of consumption when the price has fallen nearly $20 in the space of about 6 weeks. And this is a very clear break in the succession of higher reaction lows. West Texas Intermediate has been considerably less consistent than Brent crude, and it is now experiencing this massive reaction against the prevailing trend. We had this inability to hold breakouts over the course of this year. It did continue to hold its succession of higher reaction lows, but it was a choppy uptrend to begin with, and now it has broken. Well, a lot of people will be thinking, well, what is $60 going to hold? But a simple fact of the matter is that there is a lot of oil that can come to market at somewhat higher prices. The much bigger picture, of course, is that oil prices do tend to move in extraordinarily long cycles. And if we look at something over the course of a century, and we do have the luxury of having oil prices that go back that far, well, we can then see that there is clear evidence here that the price does tend to have extraordinarily long ranges that are resolved by very emphatic and lengthy bull markets. Well, we've just had one of those bull markets, and by and large, these lengthy ranges can last for decades. We've had one decade, and there is the possibility that we could have another one. So I think that's one of the more important points. Well, That's obviously going to represent a headwind for some of the oil producers, but it's a tailwind for the consumers. Then we also have the fact that, and I've posted a couple of articles in here today about the fact that not only are Chinese manufacturers starting to rethink their plans about expanding into North America, but lots of foreign manufacturers are rethinking their plans about expanding in China. So there are a significant number of manufacturers are starting to pull or to rethink any plans that they might have had for expanding or manufacturing in China. And that represents really a significant challenge for the Chinese economy because there has been a major break in terms of the confidence that people have in the Chinese economy. And the story that broke in early October about the interdiction of the supply chain by the Chinese security forces, regardless of the fact that it happened in 2015, it is the fact that the story has been broken, that's representative of this more ambivalent attitude among particularly among the US administration about investing in China and the trustworthiness of China as a partner within the global economy has been broken. So now we're really starting to just see the very beginning of a migration out of Chinese manufacturing. Well, of course, that then raises the very big question about who is going to benefit. Well, India has got to be one of those. And despite the fact that it has had been a singular failure in really attracting successfully a lot of manufacturing, India has got a vast young population. And its population is likely to exceed China's, and half the population right now is under the age of 25. So we're talking about 600 million people that are going to need jobs over the course of the next decade and longer. So that is a demographic dividend that is literally unparalleled in history. Well, now the big question is whether India can get its act together to really capitalize on the potential that that represents. And it does have that potential because of low wages, certainly lower costs than China has right now, but also because of an intention by international manufacturers to migrate. And of course, you have, against all of that background, wages have gone up a lot in China. So the Nifty index has bounced from the 10,000 level. Well, it really does need to push back above the trend mean, but at least the 10,000 area is representing a reasonable area of support in here. The RBI has been very persistent in attempting to squeeze some of the leverage out of the banking sector and getting them to tackle the bad loans, but the Bombay Banks Index is back above its trend mean and it has continued to lead. Even some of the banks that have been hardest hit have at least stabilized. Yes Bank, for example, has put in a higher reaction low. It's only incrementally higher, but it is higher nonetheless. Then, if we look at one of the better performing banks, which would be ICICI, well, then that has, if one were to simply look at it in isolation, you'd be forgiven for thinking that there was ever a problem. And it is now pushing the upper side of its range. So, what that does suggest is that we've been through a period of, or I guess, a shot across the bows in terms of those that are taking excessive risks in the banking sector, but probably not a great deal more than that. Then there is the potential that India could be really a net beneficiary of the strife that China is currently experiencing. Then, when we have the Vietnam, Vietnam has been positioning itself as the new China, but the market did accelerate up to that peak that we saw earlier this year. Then it has pulled back to the region of the trend mean, and now it is bouncing from around the 900 area. Well, it needs to push back above the psychological 1,000 level to really demonstrate a return to demand dominance. But Vietnam has got a reasonably large young population as well and has been very aggressively targeting the manufacturing sector for growth. So it's also a clear beneficiary. What's also interesting here is that the Philippine peso has strengthened over the last few weeks and it's now testing the region of its trend mean. Well, this has been a very consistent trend in favor of the dollar since 2013, and if this were anything else, one would be thinking that this is an opportune time to be buying the US dollar. But this significant depreciation in the peso has certainly bolstered the competitiveness of the Filipino economy. Well, if we start to see the peso strengthening through the trend mean, and that is by no means guaranteed, then that would represent a pretty significant bullish mark for the Philippine composite. And when we look at that market, it has been underperforming now for a while, and in fact been trending lower for most of this year. Well, it's right on the region of its lows. It really does need to demonstrate that support is coming back in around current levels. Now, when we look at some of the rest of Asia, Singapore, with its heavy weighting in financials, has been pulling back just like financials just about everywhere. But that was a pretty clear upper dynamic that we saw last week. But it does need to break its succession of lower rally highs to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Then the H share index in Hong Kong has steadied, certainly, with that upper dynamic from the 10,000 level last week, but it needs to follow through on the upside and it needs to push back above the trend mean to confirm more than just near-term support. And the downward pressure that is starting to build again on the renminbi may act as something of a headwind in those terms. Then let's take a look at what's going on in Germany. Well, the DAX index doesn't look like a particularly bullish chart. It has got a very clear head and shoulders or type 3 top formation over the course of the last 18 months. Now it is unwinding the short-term oversold condition, but isn't doing a particularly effective job of that. Now the big question is whether 12,000, having been an area of support for over a year and a half, is now going to represent resistance. The fact of the matter is that the automotive sector in Germany is certainly in trouble. And when we look at the shares that were in negative territory in here today, well, we have Continental, Volkswagen, and Daimler. So these are very clearly representative of some of the issues that reside within the economy because of the diesel scandal that broke nearly 2 years ago. They are all now in a position where they need to invest billions of dollars in additional new production, and that is going to represent a significant headwind. Then, if we look at Siemens, they came through with a significant share buyback offer in here today, but the region of that 100 euro level, which had been resistance all the way through between 2014 and 2016, really does need now to demonstrate support if potential for higher to lateral ranging is to be given the benefit of the doubt. And it certainly has work to do, considering that there's that lower a progression of lower rally highs over the course of the last year and a half. So what that suggests to me is that Europe is just not there yet. That there is the potential for the market to rally over the course of the next few weeks, but it just has so much work to do in terms of sorting out the issues that are assailing so many of its individual members. Well, the euro is down to 1.13, and considering the fact that it had bounced reasonably effectively over about 10 days ago, it has now come right back down again. So this rally has not been sustained yesterday, and then it followed through on the downside here today. This continues to look like a bearish chart, that the failed break above 118 has seen it come right back down and test the lower side of the range. We've seen just some short-term steadying, and The price has been trending lower all year, and I anticipate that it's probably going to continue to trend lower, considering the weight of arguments that are just lining up behind the Eurozone. Well, gold prices, just by virtue of the fact of going sideways, have now unwound all of the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. Now the big question is whether we're going to see it break up and away from this most recent range. We can also see that we had one upper dynamic on the first day of the month, and then over the course of the last few sessions, we've had a lot of trading, but the price hasn't gone anywhere. Well, it suggests that investors probably need some convincing, but we give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamics, and then the most recent dynamic is upwards. That suggests that the chances are we are going to see some additional upside on the gold price. And gold is being led higher by platinum. Now, platinum was in mildly negative territory in here today, but if it finds support around the $850 area, which represents the upper side of the trading range put in before the decline below $800, and now also represents around the region of the trend mean, then we can perhaps conclude that platinum is on a recovery trajectory. So we're at a rather important Rubicon here for those precious metals. Now, copper prices have been struggling to hold a rally. Now, they have pulled back again to that $2.70 area and closed off the low. Well, if we get upside follow through tomorrow, that would represent a higher reaction low, and it would be the beginnings of some of clear evidence that this is support building rather than a distribution below the overhead top formation. Now, when we look at what's going on in Australia, there are the twin challenges of the volatility that we've had in the commodity markets and the pressure that's coming to bear on home building shares everywhere. But nonetheless, the ASX is unwinding its short-term oversold condition. Now the big question is whether that region of the trend mean is going to be an area of resistance on this occasion, but it is at least unwinding that oversold condition. And the outlook for the Aussie dollar is now also going to be questioned. Having bounced from the 70-cent level, it is now challenging the succession of lower rally highs since the beginning of this year. Well, this is where we're likely to see at least some consolidation, but if it can push back above the 73-cent level and hold it, well, then we'll have broken the downtrend. So we're at a rather important level for the Australian dollar in here right now as well. Now let's just quickly run through the largest shares, because just not only because they're the largest shares and represent significant weightings within the major indices, but they also are some of the most popular shares that people tend to own. Well, Apple was in mildly negative territory today, but it's continuing to hold that $200 area. Amazon has bounced by approximately $250 from its retest of that $1,500 area. And perhaps more importantly than that, is now challenging the succession of lower rally highs. Well, it was pretty much unchanged in here today, and this is, I think, a rather important point here, that if it can push back above $1,800, well, then it will have broken the succession of lower rally highs. And this is already a significant rebound. It has room now in which to consolidate and put in a higher reaction low. The most important thing for Amazon is that it hold the region of the trend mean. Now, when we look at Google, it's moved from being one of the most consistent trends in the world to being less consistent. And now it has unwound the oversold condition relative to the trend mean, and it's bounced from that psychological $1,000 area, but it needs to demonstrate that it can push back above the trend mean. There have been precious few examples of it trading below the trend mean in terms of the history over the course of the last decade. So this is going to be a major test for Google. And Facebook has also still got this succession of lower rally highs evidenced since the middle of this year. So it has a, I think, a hurdle in front of it to push successfully on a sustained basis back above that $150 area. But then if we look at Microsoft, Microsoft pulled back to the region of the trend mean and has bounced. Now, there is a clear similarity between Amazon, or excuse me, between Apple and Microsoft in that they have reasonably sustainable business models that are cash flow generative and they pay dividends, and that their dividend growth rates have been rather impressive, and they're also buying back their shares. Whereas Apple, Google, excuse me, Amazon, Google, and Facebook do not pay dividends, and therefore they have been subject to a lot more volatility. Well, it is in the dividend paying companies that we seem to be getting more interest. So, for example, the ProShares S&P 500 Dividend Aristocrats ETF has bounced pretty emphatically. Now, there are a significant number of shares within that fund that are purely, I think, aimed at the consumer, but then there are a significant number of others that are very industrially oriented. Well, the industrial shares have obviously got more to worry about from the trade war because they both rely on China for as a customer, but also for manufacturing. So that's one of the challenges for the broad index. Whereas when, for example, we look at the performance of some of the household name type companies, they have been doing better. Reckitt-Benckiser, for example, now is right in the region of its trend mean, having rebounded pretty impressively from the beginning of this year. The period in October was a non-event for it. Now the question is whether it can find support soon if the rebound is going to hold. Then Unilever, and let's look at the Dutch version. Unilever has held this succession of higher major reaction lows for most of the decade, and it has just put in the most recent of those. So it isn't simply that Coca-Cola or Pepsi or Procter and Gamble or Nestle are doing better, but we have seen a pattern of outperformance right across the consumer-oriented sector. And part of the reason for that is because they're defensive on the one hand, but also because they have bond-like characteristics that are much closer to floating rate notes rather than traditional fixed income bonds. So that is something that is attractive from the perspective of yield-hungry investors, and most particularly those that want to insulate themselves from the threat of rising interest rates. Now, when we look at some of the more speculative sectors, the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index continues to unwind its oversold condition, but this really has very clear type 2 topping characteristics. Whereas when we look at the biotech sector, it has now rebounded from the lower side, or at least I very much hesitate to call this a range, considering there is such a succession of higher reaction lows within it, whereas you have equal lows on the pullbacks. Well, let's just say that it has bounced from previous areas of support, and now it is testing the region of the trend mean. Well, if it can push back above it, then that's going to be pretty impressive from the perspective of the biotech sector generally. Now, I think if we take a step back and think about where are we, well, we're definitely late in the cycle, but the big question that's sitting out there in the market is how much of the big pullback we saw in October was interest rates, or interest rate related, or bond market related, how much of it was to do with the midterm election, and how much of it had to do with this supply chain interdiction story that broke out of China. Well, it was a confluence of those. Certainly now we have the removal of the midterm election worry. Now the bigger question is, when is the Federal Reserve going to stop raising interest rates? And are we going to see more fiscal stimulus coming through from places in Europe, or indeed in China. The size of the Fed's balance sheet continues to deteriorate. The total balance sheets of central banks has been declining over the course of the last 7 months. Well, part of the reason for that is because of the strength of the dollar. But the fact is that with central bank balance sheets not just falling or deteriorating in the USA, but on a global basis, then that's suggestive of liquidity coming out of the market. So we know that eventually this is going to represent a headwind that is terminal in nature. But I suspect that we're probably not there quite yet. Now, the big question is, of course, and this will be the clear vindication of that view, is when we get the next significant pullback on markets, that we see higher reaction lows. And that is going to be a necessary component. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.